Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 931. The Trumpen Confabanda, part 10, Echoes from the Past, Visions of the Future. This is being recorded on November 11th of the year 2016. Yep, Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the U.S., and things are taking shape as I had seen all the way around. There are many things to be said. I could perhaps say I told you so, because I did, not necessarily about Trump being elected, but about this happening at some point. Oh, yes, what is this? This is fascism. What the Trump campaign and now the Trump administration or administrations, plural, are is the transition or the morphing of the underground Reich in this country from a clandestine, albeit institutionalized, entity into a broad-based popular movement. It is happening in other countries as well. And now it is has happened in the U.S. There are many things that I could say, many things that have not been talked about, for example, in some of the so-called battleground states. Was there hacking of machines? We were told all throughout the campaign that the Russians may hack our election machines. I don't believe that. I don't believe the whole Putin boogeyman thing, although certainly Putin is tied to the Trump campaign, but it isn't that Trump and the forces around him are Putin slash Russian slash Kremlin dupes. Rather, the Trump campaign, as I have said, constitutes a manifestation at one level of German Ostpolitik. For the records, 918, 919, and 928 and 9 go into that. The usual suspects have had the usual predictable things to say, the so-called progressive sector, and as always, note my use of the term so-called, and then saying, well, if only Bernie Sanders had got the Democratic nomination, and he would have been destroyed. Why, so-called progressives, do you suppose that Karl Rove was channeling money to Bernie Sanders' campaign through his American Crossroads Super PAC? Did you think about that? Of course you didn't. Did you investigate how many of the, quote, small, unquote, quote, anonymous, unquote, contributions to St. Bernard's campaign were actually laundered through the American Crossroads Super PAC? Of course you didn't. And the usual media sources, the mainstream media, wondering, well, gee, how come we didn't see this coming? And the so-called progressive media are saying, well, this is because the Democrats, you know, the same crap, frankly, that the so-called progressive sector usually does. They're blaming it on Hillary Clinton or the Democratic Party. They never even discussed the Democratic Party platform or the fact that Hillary Clinton was openly talking about repealing the Citizens United decision. I don't know how she would have done that. It is, of course, academic at this point. And by the way, as pointed out In recent programs, the deputy campaign manager for Donald Trump was David Bossie, the head of Citizens United. But the usual is happening. Everybody's going, oh, my, how could this have happened? This is so terrible. Well, it is terrible. But as to how it has happened for decades. I've been on the air. I'm in my 38th year on the air. And my entire website and the books, the old anti-fascist books that are available for download for free, stand as testimony to how it happened. It has been happening out front, albeit quietly for a long time. And whenever there has been a major bump in the road, the so-called progressive sector and the mainstream media have been saying, well, this is conspiracy theory. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. Yeah. Well, all I have to say, Mother Jumpers, is you aren't going to have to believe in conspiracy theories very much longer, because you're going to have it right in your face and right up your bloody, stinking goddamn rear end, because it is a-coming. And I'm going to roll through a number of articles in this program. Do use the SpitfireList.com website. After this program, I'm going to do something unprecedented. I'm going to take a small, but unprecedented, that is, for on these programs. There is a very good and short book by David K, that's spelled C-A-Y, Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N, called The Making of Donald Trump. And I'm going to read that in serial installments. It is not a long book at all. The type is relatively large. The margins are large. But for some weeks, I'm going to read that into the record. I'm not going to read absolutely all of the main body of text, but most of it. There was an article, an internet blurb. Good Morning America took a poll of American prospective voters and found that on the honesty subject, they found Donald Trump preferable to Hillary Clinton. I think when I read The Making of Donald Trump into the record, and I emphatically recommend that people buy that book. Neither myself nor any of these stations have any financial dog in this fight. It's just that it is an important book, and that the American people could have seen Donald Trump as more honest than Hillary Clinton really stands as a mute monument to everything that has gone wrong with this society. And for the record, so to speak, the United States of America, or the late United States of America, is a failed society, and it ain't going to survive too much longer in its present form. We'll cover it as it goes down. However, talking about echoes from the past and visions of the future, the subtitle of this program, from the Talking Points Memo Editor's Blog from November 5th of 2016, a post by Josh Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, Trump rolls out anti-Semitic closing ad. Reads in part, take a moment to look at this closing ad from Donald Trump. From a technical and thematic perspective, it's a well-made ad. It's also packed with anti-Semitic dog whistles, anti-Semitic tropes, and anti-Semitic vocabulary. I'm not even sure whether it makes sense to call them dog whistles. The four readily identifiable American bad guys in the ad are Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Jewish financier, and parenthetically, I would add, probable Mormon Jew, Janet Yellen, Jewish Fed chair, and Lloyd Blankfein, B-L-A-N-K-F-E-I-N, Jewish Goldman Sachs CEO. The Trump narration immediately preceding Soros and Yellen proceeds as follows. Quote, "The establishment has trillions of dollars at stake in this election. For those who control the levers of power in Washington, start Soros, and for the global, start Yellen's special interests, stop Yellen. They partner with these people, start Clinton, who don't have your good in mind," unquote. For Blankfein, "It's a global power structure that is responsible for the economic decisions that have robbed our working class, stripped our country of its wealth, and put that money into the Start Blankfein pockets of a handful of large corporations, Stop Blankfein, and political entities." Of course, they're talking about the links. And Josh Marshall goes on to comment, "These are standard anti-Semitic themes and storylines using established anti-Semitic vocabulary, lined up with high-profile Jews as the only Americans other than Clinton who are apparently relevant to the story. As you can see by my transcription, the Jews come to punctuate specific key phrases, Soros, those who control the levers of power in Washington," unquote. Yellen, quote, "global special interests," unquote. Blankfein, quote, "put money into the pockets of handful of large corporations," unquote. This is an anti-Semitic ad every bit as much as the infamous Jesse Helms White Hands ad or the Willie Horton ad were anti-African-American ads, which is to say, really anti-Semitic. You could even argue that it is more so given certain linguistic similarities with anti-Semitic propaganda from the 1930s. But it is not a contest. This is an ad intended to appeal to anti-Semites and spread anti-Semitic ideas. That's the only standard that really matters. This is intentional and by design. It is no accident. Trump has electrified anti-Semites and racist groups across the country. His own campaign has repeatedly found itself sticking to anti-Semites, tweeting their anti-Semitic memes, retweeting anti-Semites. Trump's campaign manager, Steve Bannon, is an anti-Semite. More about him later. He is apparently being seriously considered as chief of staff. And before the election itself, a New York Times story from November 7th of 2016 by Jonathan Mahler, M-A-H-L-E-R, and Julie Turkowitz, T-U-T as in Tom, or Trump, U-R-K-E-W-I-T-Z. "Even if Trump loses, his candidacy has emboldened extremist supporters," unquote. And, of course, he didn't lose. Skipping down. "Trump has shown that our message is healthy, normal, organic, and that millions of Americans agree with us," said Matthew M. Heimbach, H-E-I-M-B-A-C-H, a co-founder of the Traditionalist Youth Network, a white nationalist group that claims to support the interests of working class whites. It also advocates the separation of the races. "Whatever happens on November 8th, Mr. Trump's candidacy has brought groups like Mr. Heimbach's out of the shadows, and they say they have no intention of returning." And skipping down. "The biggest beneficiary may well be the so-called alt-right, the once obscure and now ascendant white nationalist movement with close ties to Breitbart News, the website operated by Mr. Trump's campaign manager, Stephen K. Bannon." And indeed, Bannon may become chief of staff in the White House. It remains to be seen. Very quickly, in For the Record 9:30, I took a look at the Trump campaign's links to the Alpha Bank in Russia. That is part of the Alpha Group. And although that connection has predictably been officially discredited, in fact, it appears to be valid, this is not the play into the, well, Trump is a Putin slash Russia slash Kremlin dupe, but rather his campaign, and in particular his critical comments about NATO and relatively benign comments about Putin and Ukraine, are a manifestation of German Ostpolitik. And I think down the line, at some point, you will see Russia, you'll see some sort of concession by Russia vis-a-vis Ukraine. In turn, Russia and its Eurasian Economic Union will be joined to an all-European Economic Union, and you will see what we talked about in For the Record 918 and 919, an economic union stretching from Lisbon, Portugal, to Vladivostok in Russia. I think also you will see NATO gradually scale back and ultimately dissolving to be replaced by an all-EU army, albeit a non-nuclear one that would not threaten Russia.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com. Also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
One of the key people involved with the Alpha Bank also is a key advisor to Donald Trump about foreign policy. That's a guy named Richard Burt, last name B-U-R-T. He not only is a protege of Henry Kissinger, but was Ronald Reagan's ambassador to Germany from 1985 to 1989 in the run-up to German reunification. From the Daily Beast of November 7th of 2016, Trump and Russia, All the Mogul's Men by James Miller. And skipping down. Richard Burt is the chairman of the Advisory Council for the National Interest, the in-house journal of the Center for National Interest, where Trump delivered his maiden foreign policy speech last April. He is also a senior member of the senior advisory board of Russia's Alpha Bank, a major Moscow financial institution which thus far has escaped Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine. Burt was recruited by Paul Manafort to help the Trump campaign write a speech that tried to define his foreign policy vision. And skipping down. According to Politico, Burt was paid $365,000 in the first half of 2016 for work he did to lobby for the building of a new natural gas pipeline, Nord Stream 2, which would supply more gas to Europe while bypassing Ukraine and Belarus. Again, that is something we should note, although in August of last year, a number of European corporations, including major German firms like BASF, one of the companies that grew out of IG Farben, pulled out of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Don't be surprised if ultimately it is reinstated. They rejoin that project. The point being that Burt, there's a link in the description for this show, Burt was a lobbyist for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That makes him a lobbyist for major German corporations and through that for the Bormann Capital Network that controls corporate Germany, among other institutions. Details about that from Politico, October 7th of 2016. Article by Ben Schreckinger, or Schreckinger, S-C-H-R-E-C-K-I-N-G-E-R, and Julia Ioffe, I-O-F-F-E. Lobbyist advised Trump campaign while promoting Russian pipeline. And it notes, skipping down, for his part, Burt, a former Reagan State Department official and U.S. ambassador to Germany, said he does not consider himself an advisor to the campaign, that he would provide Hillary Clinton with advice if asked. Take that with a grain of salt. Skipping down, Burt's connections to Russia go back many decades. In 1989, former President George H.W. Bush appointed Burt to negotiate the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty with the USSR, which was concluded in 1991. In recent years, the 69-year-old Burt said he has advised Russia's Alpha Bank, and he continues to work with the bank's co-founder, Mikhail Friedman. As we looked at in For the Record 930 and previously in For the Records 530 and 573, the Alpha Bank gives every evidence of being a Russian branch of the Borman Capital Network, and indeed, the Alpha Fellowship is on the same page as the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft Fellowship, which Mohammed Atta used certainly to get from Egypt into Hamburg, Germany, and very possibly from Hamburg, Germany, into the U.S. It isn't Russian slash Kremlin slash Putin dupe, etc. It is a Borman manifestation, in all probability, of German Ostpolitik. And more about Richard Burt. Richard R. Burt, senior advisor for the Center, from the website of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Skipping down, Burt, it says, as U.S. ambassador to the Federal Republic of Germany from 1985 to 1989, during the preliminary stages of German reunification. As we looked at in AFA program number 3, the Reagan administration's personnel were selected by a woman named Helena von Damm. She was a protege of Otto von Bolsving, Adolf Eichmann's superior in the administration of so-called Jewish matters for the SS and the Third Reich. Von Bolsving then jumped to the Galen Org and the CIA and was brought into the U.S. courtesy of Alan Dulles. I played a small role in breaking the original San Jose Mercury News story about Helena von Damm and Otto von Bolsving. I would note that she was very, very close to him. She was basically a protege. She said she knew him socially. It was much more than that. I also went into the von Damm, von Bolsving connection in For the Record 3:32. In For the Record 882, I read into the record some segments of excerpts of a Sports Illustrated article from February of 1984. That was my first encounter with Donald Trump. This was when he was the owner of the New Jersey Generals, a USFL football team. And it showed four pictures of Donald Trump associates. One of them was of his former Czech Olympic skiing champion or competitor, Ivana Trump, his first wife. Another was Helena von Damm. Another was Norman Vincent Peale, best known as the author of The Power of Positive Thinking, not nearly as well known for being a front for Axis spies, which he was during World War II. And the other was Roy Cohn, the chief attorney for Joe McCarthy's anti-communist witch hunts in the 1950s. There was no doubt in my mind from that moment forward that Donald Trump was basically underground Reich, that he was a fascist. And that was back in 1984, and boy, have things played out in that regard ever since. One of the points that I made in For the Record 929 was that Nigel Farage, F-A-R-A-G-E, I may be mispronouncing the man's last name, He was one of the prime movers behind the Brexit, the exit of Great Britain from the European Union. That Brexit removed one of the last major obstacles to the establishment of a German-dominated all-European army. There are still some obstacles. Mark my words, those will be removed in time. And I opine, Nigel Farage, by the way, is very, very close to Donald Trump and very close to Stephen K. Bannon, the head of Breitbart, former head of Breitbart, and now he was the campaign chairman for Donald Trump and may become his chief of staff. I noted again that Brexit removed one of the major obstacles to a German-dominated all-EU army, something, by the way, that was articulated in the late 40s and early 1950s, in, for the record, 918 and later in 919. I took a look, first of all, at the open letter to Stalin from 1949, published in the Bürger Zeitung, that a publishing outlet for, among other entities, the Steuben Society. It was a German-American society that evolved into a front for the Nazi Fifth Column in this country, and then the underground Reich Fifth Column in this country after the close of World War II. Donald Trump is very close to the Steuben Society, as we looked at in, for the record, 928 and 929. And I think the Trump candidacy was intended to function in a manner similar to the open letter to Stalin from 1949, to open up a bidding war between Russia and the U.S. for Germany's favors. And I think ultimately you will see concessions by Russia and by Germany nominally over Ukraine, and Russia will become part of a large trade union, again, stretching from Lisbon in Portugal all the way to Vladivostok in Russia. We talked about this in 918 and 919. I think ultimately the American-dominated NATO will be superseded by a German-dominated all-EU army. And for the record, 802, we spoke about, among other things, Jean-Claude Juncker. He was formerly chief of state in Luxembourg. His father fought for Nazi Germany in World War II. And Jean-Claude Juncker is very, very close to the Bertelsmann organization as well. Bertelsmann was the publisher for the Nazi SS, the publishing house of the Nazi SS in World War II, and dominates English language publishing today. It also has a huge participatory element in the music business through BMG, its music arm. Sure enough, as soon as Donald Trump was elected, we saw Jean-Claude Juncker, now the head of the European Commission, the top governing body of the EU, putting forth a call for, can you guess, boys and girls? That's right, an all-EU army. From the Daily Mail of November 10th of 2016, an article by Dave Burke, B-U-R-K-E, EU chief mounts fresh call for European army, claiming, quote, Americans won't protect us forever, unquote. Donald Trump's election as U.S. president has sparked fresh call for an EU army amid a warning that the continent will not always be able to rely on American protection. It reads in part, the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, J-U-N-C as in Charlie, K-E-R, voiced his concerns after the Republicans' surprise victory was announced. He said a community of defense is required, Juncker said. We need more security in Europe, and I do not mean just the anti-terror fight. Talking about security, we need a different way of organizing a European defense, skipping down, Juncker said, we need it now. The idea that the Americans will eternally see to European security is not true. He's right about that. And skipping down again, bearing in mind Nigel Farage's leading of the Brexit movement, removing Great Britain as an obstacle to the all-EU army. British Defense Secretary Michael Fallon rubbished the idea of a shared European army last month, stating, quote, we continue to oppose any new military structure that would introduce a second layer of command and control. Command and control is a matter for the military. It is a matter for NATO. Well, it was, but now that Britain is out of the EU, the path is to a greater extent cleared for all EU army. Now, hearkening back briefly to For the Record 930, we pointed out in connection with Alpha Bank that Mikhail Friedman, an associate of Richard Burt, a Trump foreign policy advisor, bought the commodities firm that had previously been owned by Mark Rich, a major player in the Iraq aid scandal. Alpha Bank was proposed as a purchaser for Mark Rich's commodities firm. That fell through. But a major player with Alpha, Mikhail Friedman, did in fact buy Mark Rich's firm. We also looked at the fact that the investigation of Mark Rich from 1987 to 1993 was overseen by none other than James Comey, currently head of the FBI. Comey also was in charge with investigating the Bill Clinton pardon of Mark Rich. I wonder to what extent that link between Comey and the investigations into Mark Rich dictated the official discreditation of the Alpha Bank Trump computer link that we looked at in For the Record 930. That is something that we looked at, in particular the description for the Record 930 should be examined at some length.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
With regard to the FBI, it is worth noting that in For the Record 906, we took a look at a book that was published by Peter Schweitzer, S-C-H-W-E-I-Z-E-R, and it was made into a, quote, documentary that was produced by former Breitbart chairman Stephen Bannon. Apparently that book, and by the way, Schweitzer is a protege of the Koch brothers. Schweitzer, or the book Clinton Cash, however, was the source used by people within FBI for the, quote, investigation, unquote, of the Clinton Foundation. And I would note for you Bernie bots out there that during the closing phases of St. Bernard's campaign to get the Democratic nomination, he was basically referencing that book and talking about Hillary Clinton having run a money laundering operation. And by the way, Bernie Sanders' St. Bernard wasn't even a member of the Democratic Party until about a year ago, and he formally left the Democratic Party on July 27th. For you young people out there, if you want to run an organization, you have to basically roll up your sleeves and dig in and work. Life doesn't work that way. You don't join an organization, expect to become the leader of that organization, and then get all hissy-pissy and leave when you don't make it to the top position. But that's what St. Bernard did. And again, during the, one of the reasons, although I agree with the vast majority of policy positions articulated by Bernard Sanders, And also in that context, again, I would also like to live forever. The chances of those policy positions becoming political reality and the chances of my living forever are identical. Zero. Nope, ain't gonna happen. But I could not put my disrespect for Bernie Sanders and for the older people who back him, not the young people. If I were a kid, maybe I'd be backing him too. Young people have not had the time to learn about the world in which they live. And I think although her comments about Bernie Sanders' supporters were badly distorted, there were tweets going out saying she called them basement dwellers. Actually, her comments were very insightful. And the basement dwelling reference was part of a comment she made that these are children of the Great Recession. They're living in their parents' basements. They don't have very good prospects. And so, you know, they're looking for somebody who will give them some hope. It was actually a very measured and insightful characterization, not the distortion that made it into social media. But the older people who backed Bernard Sanders and then got all bent out of shape when he didn't get the nomination, well, I share the contempt for them that I feel for Bernie Sanders, who, if he ever became president, and he wouldn't become president, would be truly dangerous, not as dangerous as Donald Trump, but he was very obviously intoxicated with his own influence. He is a very immature human being, very self-centered, and dangerously narcissistic. If he ever got into power, he could become another Lenin or another Mao or somebody along those lines. But he never would. In 1980, Bernie Sanders was a presidential elector for the Socialist Workers' Party. Do you know what would have happened to him if he'd gotten a Democratic nomination? Aside from the fact that his economic proposals basically were dependent on 5.3% economic annual growth, GDP growth, something that is not going to happen. In lieu of that, it would have involved large tax increases, including for the middle class. Well, as soon as St. Bernard got the nomination, you would have seen the national news media going nuts. They would have, Fox News would have taken the hippiest, Jewiest picture of a young Bernie Sanders against the background of the former Soviet Union with a great big red hammer and sickle and a red question mark, and he would have been torn apart. But he was never going to get that far. That is, I am sure, why Karl Rove was helping to finance Bernard Sanders' campaign. Anyway, the FBI was using the same Clinton Cash book that was basically written by Koch brothers' protege Peter Schweitzer, and the documentary, unquote, that was produced from that by Breitbart chairman, Trump campaign CEO Stephen Bannon. From Salon Magazine of November 3rd of 2016 by Gary Legum, L-E-G-U-M, FBI takes a page from Breitbart, far-right Clinton Cash book used in Foundation investigation. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has gone full Breitbart. Okay, not really, but this nugget from the New York Times story on how the Bureau kept two investigations under wraps this summer so as not to appear to be meddling in the presidential campaign could lead you to wonder. In August, the FBI grappled with whether to issue subpoenas in the Clinton Foundation case, which was in its preliminary stages. The investigation, based in New York, had not developed much evidence and was based mostly on information that had surfaced in news stories and the book Clinton Cash, unquote, according to several law enforcement officials briefed on the case. Oh, neat. Clinton Cash. The partisan hit job published last year by Breitbart's editor-at-large, Peter Schweitzer, and later adapted into a documentary that was executive produced by former Breitbart chairman and current Trump campaign CEO Stephen Bannon. Next, the FBI will tell us that Roger Stone was the special agent in charge of the investigation. If you have forgotten about Clinton Cash, Digby laid out a nice case against it and Schweitzer. The short version is that the book was one in a long, long line of thinly sourced tales about the Clintons that have made millions of dollars for various right-wing writers and publishing houses since the early 1990s. For that matter, these tales sold a lot of copies of the New York Times as well when it went all in chasing whitewater stories early in Bill Clinton's presidency. And by the way, the Senate Whitewater Committee had James Comey as an investigator. And skipping down. This latest blow-up is simply the newest chapter in better than two decades of Republicans co-opting the FBI and other investigative agencies in service of chasing whatever dark Clintonian shadows they can conjure from the fever swamps of right-wing media and websites. More about the FBI. The FBI is Trump land. Anti-Clinton atmosphere spurred leaks, sources say. This by Spencer Ackerman from The Guardian of November 3rd of 2016. Highly unfavorable view of Hillary Clinton intensified after James Comey's decision not to recommend an indictment over her use of a private email server. Skipping down. Current and former FBI officials, none of whom were willing or cleared to speak on the record, have described a chaotic internal climate that resulted from outrage over Director Comey's July decision not to recommend an indictment over Clinton's maintenance of a private email server on which classified information transited. The FBI is Trump land, said one current agent. Skipping down. That currently serving FBI agent said Clinton is, quote, the Antichrist personified to a large swath of FBI personnel, unquote. And that, again, quoting, the reason why they're leaking is they are pro-Trump, unquote. Well, that is something that should give people pause to reflect. If there is a block of FBI people that partisan, what does that augur? Also, bear in mind that James Comey was a supporter of Mitt Romney in 2012, and he played his part, his leak at the last minute of a new investigation of Clinton emails before any examination of the information could be undertaken, was probably a violation of the Hatch Act. Comey could be prosecuted. I doubt he will be. And as it turned out, the emails were duplicates of ones that had already been examined by the FBI. But bearing in mind that Breitbart / Trump land faction within FBI, which would appear to be dominant, look at that against the background of the acquittal of Ayman Bundy and the armed insurrectionists who occupied the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge up in Oregon. They were acquitted of all charges. Montel Williams, the former daytime TV talk show host, tweeted something apropos. Imagine if they had been black. I mean, they would have called them an airstrike. He didn't say that. I'm saying that. What you basically saw, I'm sure people are aware of it, but a bunch of anti-government activists and ideologues armed themselves, went to the National Wildlife Refuge at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, took it over. They then accessed computers and began harassing employees, federal employees of the wildlife refuge. I mean, even if you agreed with their philosophy, the people who work there are basically just trying to put bread on the table and a roof over their heads and feed their families. To begin harassing them, which they did, is unconscionable, even if one agrees with their overall philosophy. However, they were acquitted of all charges. It is quite remarkable that they could have done something like that, and very, very revealing. Talking Points Memo Muckraker of October 28th of 2016 by Allegra Kirkland, K-I-R-K-L-A-N-D. Anti-government activists see vindication in acquittal of Oregon occupiers. Militia groups and anti-government activists rejoiced at the news that seven defendants charged in the armed occupation earlier this year of a remote federal wildlife refuge in Oregon were acquitted of all charges late Thursday. The stunning verdict in the high-profile trial has convinced those who see it as their duty to take up arms against what they view as government overreach and that their crusade is a just one. Tonight we have vindication for the life, fortune, and sacred honor we all promised to give and for which many have given already, unquote. Central Oregon Constitutional Guard leader B.J. Soper wrote in a Facebook post, adding that he had tears in his eyes all night. While the Oath Keepers, a so-called patriot group made up of current and former military and law enforcement personnel, criticized the occupiers' decision to take over a federal building, founder Stuart Rose told TPN that the jury's decision represented, quote, a victory for due process, unquote. No, actually, it is a victory for undue process. The jury said that there was not sufficient proof of a conspiracy by these people. Are you kidding me? These people came from all over the country, different places, armed, and took over government land. And then again, as we looked at in a previous show, they downloaded some information from the computers and began bugging the family members of employees of that facility. That is outrageous. And to maintain that they weren't conspiring, well, what the hell were they doing? You know, hey, Jimbo, how you doing, man? You come a long way from Arizona. Well, you too there, Billy boy. You came a long way from Utah, didn't you? Yeah, so what are you doing up here? Did you bring your gun? Yeah, I did. Well, I don't know, let's go out and look at some birds. I mean, it is unthinkable. Of course they were conspiring. That's what it was a conspiracy. The point being that it is 1 minute to midnight, and you can bet both halves of your very own rear end that it is going to strike midnight ere long. When you have people like the Trump and Confabanda dominating the FBI, and then you've got guys like the Oath Keepers and others, I mean, people with serious military skills. These people are skilled at in the use of combat arms, taking over federal land and buildings and harassing employees. You are in a lot of trouble.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
And it is very late in the day. Trump has, of course, been elected, and the people he is appointing to his transition teams are exactly what one would expect. He's got a shill for the fossil fuels industry and the EPA transitional team, and you will see the FDA, the EPA, gutted. And I'll tell you, it is going to be very interesting indeed. Again, what the Tupankhamun Verbande is the transition of the underground Reich into a broad-based popular movement in the country. And now they had taken over. Again, from Talking Points, Memo Muckraker of November 10th of 2016 by Allegra Kirkland. Trump's white nationalist backers train their eyes on elected office and admin posts. In the wake of Donald Trump's upset presidential win, the small yet vocal cohort of white nationalists who supported his campaign are refocusing their efforts from trolling liberals online to running for elected office. Their reasoning: if a candidate who appealed to the tide of anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim sentiment surging on the country's right could win over voters, why not one who is openly pro-white? I have been very surprised that we have not seen attractive, well-spoken, racially aware candidates running for local office, unquote. Jared Taylor, head of the white nationalist American Renaissance publication and annual conference, told TPM in the Wednesday phone call, "I think this will be inevitable, and I think that Trump will have encouraged this, that our people will run for school board, city council, mayor, all that I anticipate certainly," unquote. Others are thinking in the short term and training their eyes perhaps more quixotically on possible positions in a Trump administration. William Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, arguably did the most to advocate for the real estate mogul's campaign through traditional political channels. The Los Angeles-based lawyer and chair of the white nationalist American Freedom Party founded the pro-Trump American National Super PAC, bankrolled robocalls on his behalf, and was listed to serve as a Trump delegate at the Republican National Convention until media outcry forced the Trump campaign to remove his name and attribute his inclusion to a, quote, data error, unquote. Johnson told TPM his plan now is to, quote, wheedle my way into a Trump administration, unquote. He said he'd love a position as ambassador to Japan or the Philippines, countries home to many of his legal clients, or Undersecretary of Agriculture as he runs a small persimmon farm. These likely remain pipe dreams given that the Trump campaign has said in the past that it, quote, strongly condemns, unquote, Johnson's rhetoric. Yeah, right, I would say. Continuing. Right now, because the election is over and there's going to be no election for another 2 years, we're not focused on people running for office, Johnson said. We're focused on getting people into the administration and working within the system. But in another year or so, when elections start gearing up, we will put our candidates into place, unquote. Meanwhile, civil rights groups are keeping a wary eye on the slow creep of white nationalists and the alt-right from marginalized conferences and online message boards into walking, waking political life. Oren Owarian Segal, S-E-G-A-L, director of the ADL's Center on Extremism, believes that the, quote, bigotry and anti-Semitism and hatred, unquote, that voters saw coming out during the campaign was just the beginning. Well, you got that right, buddy boy. And the end, well, the end will be coming, including for you, Mr. Aaron Siegel of the ADL. Wait till you see how this ends up. And speaking of the personnel whom Trump may be considering, from CNN of November 11th of 2016, this by Jeremy Diamond, Dana Bash, B-A-S-H, and Evan Perez, P-E-R-E-Z, Trump strongly considering Steve Bannon for chief of staff. President-elect Donald Trump is strongly considering naming his campaign CEO, Steve Bannon, to serve as his White House chief of staff, a source with knowledge of the situation told CNN on Thursday. The White House chief of staff is typically tasked in large part with ensuring that all wheels are spinning in the complex White House organization, and the source said that some people in Trump's orbit do not think Bannon, the executive chairman of Breitbart News, who joined Trump's campaign in August, is the best fit for that position. Trump's contemplation of Bannon as chief of staff comes as his presidential transition team is feverishly ramping up its efforts to build out an administration after his surprising win on Tuesday. And it remains to be seen if, in fact, Steve Bannon becomes White House chief of staff. He certainly was Trump's campaign manager. And bearing in mind that very first article that we read in this program from Talking Points Memo Editor's blog from November 5th by Josh Marshall, Trump rolls out anti-Semitic closing ad. This is an ad intended to appeal to anti-Semites and spread anti-Semitic ideas. That's the only standard that really matters. It is intentional and by design. It is no accident. Trump has electrified anti-Semites and racist groups across the country. His own campaign has repeatedly found itself speaking to anti-Semites, tweeting their anti-Semitic memes, and retweeting anti-Semites. His campaign manager, Steve Bannon, is an anti-Semite. Indeed. And consider the following. We're almost out of time. This from Salon Magazine of November 9th of 2016 by Matthew Rosa, R-O-Z as in zebra, S as in Sam A. Omarosa hints at a Donald Trump enemies list. Quote, "It's so great, our enemies are making themselves clear," unquote. The Trump administration may be pretty vindictive. Foreshadowing the possibility that the worst fears of Donald Trump's critics had merit, Omarosa Manigault, M-A-N-I-G-A-U-L-T, who met Trump while competing on The Apprentice and has campaigned for him in this election, has discussed how the Republican victor has been keeping an enemies list. "It's so great our enemies are making themselves clear so that when we get to the White House, we know where we stand," unquote, Manigault told Independent Journal Review at Trump's election night party on Wednesday. Yes, indeed. Are you out there on the list? There also was a Daily Mail article. Anglin is his last name. I think his name is Edward Anglin. Anyway, the head of the Stormfront website was advising his followers to harass people who had put pessimistic postings on social media and drive them to suicide. So, we will see how it goes. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 931. The Trip and Confabanda, part 10, Echoes from the Past, Visions of the Future. This is being recorded on November 11th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.